from 104.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. With Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Just like that, the show is in the second half here on 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Chad Withrow's in Mount Julia. Paul Kuharski's in Brentwood. David Reed, the chairman of the board in Nashville. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. Coming up at 12:15 today, Michael Kiss, the Midday 180 winner for our draft analyst competition from 2 years ago. He's back on the show today. We'll discuss the Pac-12, Big 12, and ACC players he believes are quality day two selections for teams across the NFL in the NFL draft. He'll be on from 12:15 to 12:45. Then Brandon Wright back on the show. We'll check in with him via Skype. That's coming up today at 1:15. Paul got into it a bit there on the healthy eating habits of Lebowski, and he has called David Reed to the stand to begin this hour.
Well, I would say this, and David Reed, I just asked you to correct me if you find this to be incorrect. I think I've discussed with David Reed many times on and off the air his healthy appetite along with my healthy appetite, and I would say I've never once in my life called David Reed fat.
Reed, your thoughts.
I think there's times that you've inferred it.
No, I've actually called you skinny, skinnier. I've complimented your weight loss many times.
You are more of a bowling ball of muscle than you are fat, Reed.
Well, you guys haven't seen me in 2 weeks.
The COVID-15, never mind COVID-19. Everybody's talking about the COVID-15.
There is like something over here. While we're discussing this, there is something about your background of being a bodybuilder that has always stayed in the back of my mind whenever you discuss your eating habits.
Yeah, because, well, here's how I've transitioned from that. So it used to be, you know, the 6 days of the week, strict diet, and then the seventh day, you had a cheat day. I've moved to 7 days of cheating.
Seven cheat days?
Yeah,
just seven, six cheat days and one good day?
No, just 7 straight days of cheating. I have been able to put on a lot of muscle, I kept it on for a long, long time. That's starting to transition because, full disclosure, the entire time that we're having this discussion, I have a bag of bacon over here to my right.
Bag of bacon.
Hold it up.
Bag of bacon.
Jack, can you take a photo of this?
Well, yeah.
Let me be 100% clear. This is a half of bag of bacon now because we've been at this now for 2 hours. This was full when we started. Shout out to Gifford's Bacon. I brought this up to Lebowski off air because he makes a Benton's bacon run for us occasionally. Gifford's bacon. This is, they call it life changing bacon. This is the best bacon I've ever had in my life.
What sets
you like
it apart?
Do you like the fat in the middle of the bacon like that?
Oh, yes. The fat's where the flavor's at.
Set us up with what differentiates this, say, from Benton's, which previously you had said is the best bacon. I've got the picture, Chad, if that's cool. I'll tweet it.
The difference, Paul, is he has the bacon in his hand
right now.
Yes, the bacon in my hand happens to be the best bacon, regardless if it's Hormel or Tennessee Pride. No, this is... Benton's at times can get too smoky. There's too much of a smoke flavor. This has the perfect balance of pork and fat and smoke and seasoning, and it's great. And I'm open for endorsements. The folks over at Gifford Smoked Meats in East Nashville, if you want to give your boy a shout.
I'm very staunch on this. I will die on this hill because while I call myself fat, I know that I'm reasonably sized. I have a massive appetite. You guys have seen me take down some meals. Mm-hmm. And saying that somebody has a hearty appetite or a huge appetite or that I would have to order a lot of extra food for them is an entirely different thing than calling them fat. Entirely different.
Paul,
we knew
Paul,
exactly
have you
what
had
you
a
mean.
Lot of meals? Have you had a lot of meals with Michael? With, sorry, Lebowski? Have you sat
Chad,
down
don't
over meals
names on the air? What are you doing?
You sat down and watched him eat a lot.
I've broken bread with the man.
The times I've been around, he's not eating all that much.
Yeah, I've never seen him eat a lot. Where have you seen him eat a lot specifically? Where did this happen? Where you would reference his appetite?
Oh, I think where have we had live shows, or where have we had get-togethers?
I've never seen him eat a lot of food. Ever.
Well, then, you know, I could be guilty of thinking that a larger person has a hearty appetite.
There we go. There exactly. We go.
Still, that's not
everyone
the same
knows what you're saying when you're when you yeah. say we're going to have to double up the food for you. And you have no idea how much he eats. I mean, this is not some big mystery about what you're saying.
It's not the same.
You're inferring it.
It's not the same.
All I'm saying is I feel like if you're going to go directly at someone with an insult, for the most part, unless you know them personally, weight and looks are two areas you do not go into immediately. And that always seems to be your go-to insult with, yeah,
it's
with
lazy.
People.
It's just lazy.
First off, looks people can't help.
I mean, like, this is hard for me to fathom looks, that you're going. This is hard for me to fathom that you say that I go after weight and looks when I hammer people over intelligence constantly. To suggest that weight and looks is where I go when I call people dumb daily, hourly, segment by segment on our show, I just don't understand how you're pushing that aside. I don't understand it. It's like you're just carving that out and setting it aside like it doesn't exist. I do it so regularly that you've forgotten about it.
Let's poll the room. And you go after people's intelligence too, but let's poll the room. Who goes after weight and looks way more than anyone else in the room right now?
That's not what's that question. Now you've changed the debate and you're making it me against you on these things. It's not me against you. It's me against me. What do I go after people most for? It's intelligence by far, which you're skipping past to get to weight.
But I think that's because you can't.
The funnier bit.
You can't see callers. So that's why you don't go after them for weight first or looks.
Well, that's an interesting theory. The thing I hate most in the world isn't fatness. It's dumbness. That's unquestionable.
But based also on think your stances, you also seem to hate the fat.
Oh, if they're fat and dumb, that's really bad.
There's yeah. also an element of our Midday 180 text chain where we have people who claim to work out that clearly don't work out nearly as much as they claim to.
I hate that.
And that turns into Paul's take on this one particular, in some cases more than one person.
I hate phoniness maybe more than I hate dumbness.
But this is the marriage of both.
Amen. We yes. can all agree on that.
That is the marriage of everything I hate. That's phoniness, it's dumbness, it's fatness, it's probably a hearty appetite. it's got everything.
Coming up,
off the air, I can say some other things.
We do not hate his analysis, that's for sure. He's one of the best that we've had on to talk NFL draft, and we found him through our NFL draft competition. If you've missed him the last couple of weeks, Chad made the decree last week, and we all agreed it's the open invite every Thursday at 12:15 for Michael Kist, who will join us from Bleeding Green Nation. If you haven't heard him break down the NFL draft, stay tuned. We've got him for 30 minutes. It's very good analysis, and today we will pinpoint we're trying to hit players that are not just the repeat first-round guys that you hear for months and months and months. Today we're going ACC, Pac-12, Big 12, players for day two of the draft who he really enjoyed breaking down the film of. That's next on the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
Smyrna, 104.5 FM. Franklin, 104.5 FM. Murfreesboro, 104.5 FM. No matter where you listen in Middle Tennessee, you'll always find us on one frequency. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. The standing invitation is to Michael Kist every Thursday at 12:15 as we talk NFL draft. And the last couple of weeks, we've been focusing on day two players that he has enjoyed the evaluation process of. And Michael's nice enough to join us again. He is the winner of the Midday 180 Fantasy Football, or not Fantasy Football, the Midday 180 NFL Draft Analyst Competition. Sorry, Michael, it all blends together with some of the competitions we've had over the years. Great to have you back on. How are you?
I'm doing well. I was listening to the previous segment. I think Paul might take issue with me soon because I put on about 15 pounds since this quarantine started. Man, there isn't a Swiss roll alive in this house right now.
The COVID-15, they're calling it.
If you gain any weight, Michael, Paul will be the first one to let you know about it. We can guarantee you that. He'll be the first one to acknowledge.
Do you have a hearty appetite?
I do. I snack so much at night, and I've been having trouble sleeping. Like I cut back on my drinking, too. I don't get to go out to the bar as much, so now I'm just up at night, like, watching film and TV shows and just snacking like crazy. It's like Verdun for my snack cabinet.
Don't give up the drink.
Do you say pecan or pecan? That's the storyline today of the show.
I don't think I've said pecan or pecan in a long time. I'm not a fan, to be honest with you. That might be sacrilege in your area. I'm not sure, but yeah, I could go either way.
But if we force you to say it right now, you're having a slice of blank pie. How do you say
pecan? Pecan.
Nice. I'm not alone here. I like it. That's exactly
Michael
the way
Kiss
I say it. Speaking
with
about
us of a Bleed Green Nation, it's time to turn our attention to the Pac-12 this week. We'll get to the ACC and the Big 12 coming up. And these are players, Michael, that we'll focus on for day two of the draft, players that maybe we haven't asked about or we haven't heard about much of throughout this draft process. I'll start, and we'll go around the horn here for Pac-12 players. Let's start at Arizona State with Brandon Ayuk, wide receiver. He's twitchy, a big play threat type player. 37% of his catches came out of the slot position, but he was a chess piece for Arizona State. Why do you like him?
Yeah, you know, I'm reluctant to say this for my Eagles fans that follow me that might be listening, but I can say it on here with less backlash than if it was on my feed. Ayuk is like what Nelson Aguilar should have been. Like, you take away the confidence issues and the drops, and what you're left with is a guy that can hit dingers. So he's better after the catch than Aguilar ever was. That's all over his film. There's a reason that Arizona State like to move him around and feed him screens and get him, you know, in the slot and going vertical and whatnot. He's got real breakaway potential anytime he gets his hands on the ball. So they really wanted to scheme him like that. Overall, Ayuk, I mean, he needs some technical refinement in his game, but there are no physical limitations there, in my opinion. It's all about becoming a better salesman in his routes, using his hands better against press. If he's going to be on the outside, you might want to work him a good deal more out of slot alignments at first, but all the tools are there. He's silky smooth, he's explosive, and he's an exciting prospect that adds a fun dimension to your offense and a guy that would be talked about a lot more if the class wasn't so loaded with special wide receivers at the top.
He's a physical player, too, and he has returnability in both the punt and the kick games. What stands out to you on special teams from him?
Yeah, I mean, it's just that burst. Like, he might not run 4.3, but he gets to 0-60 in a split second. He can go, so he can exploit those creases as a special teamer, which I like that added value there. You know, you bring him along, his full complete game as a wide receiver, let him come along, but he's also giving you value on manufactured touches as a deep threat and then on special teams as a returner as well. So I like his game.
Utah edge player Bradley Anae, high effort player. And just watching some of the clips on YouTube, he plays with urgency on every snap. And I'm curious, from your evaluation, how far will that get him? You know, just the urgency factor of his game.
Yeah, it matters a lot for him. And I think I said something similar about Zach Bond out of Wisconsin last week. But for Anae, like, if you rack up 13 sacks and 14 tackles for a loss in a year, you've got my attention, even if some of those are, like you said, some you know, high effort sacks, some chase down sacks and whatnot. And then you go to the Senior Bowl for Anae and you show out well in practice. You rack up some more sacks in the game. He was unblockable there. Now you've really got my interest. And the combine is where things went a little sideways for Anae. He came in with short arms, middling jumps. You wanted to see that three cone show a little more flexibility to bend the edge because that was a question you had off film. So instead of a second round guy, you're probably talking around round three to answer your question. But make no mistake about it, you're getting a dog of a player in round three that's worked really hard on shoring up the technical aspects of his craft to make up for those athletic deficiencies. He comes with a motor that doesn't quick. So while his ceiling in year one is probably a rotational sub-package pass rusher, I think he's solid enough to take a swing on in late day two, and you hope through you punch that ceiling and find yourself a solid starter in the long term.
Michael Kist, our guest. Paul, hit your Colorado wide receiver.
Yeah, I'm curious about Laviska Shenault. So many wide receivers here. I've seen him bunched kind of between Justin Jefferson and Jalen Reagor. Where... Where's he stand in this stacked wide receiver class in your eyes?
Yeah, it's weird for him because it's a weird draft process too. He didn't get to get the chance to show it in Indy because he needed surgery for, I think it was a core muscle injury, not unlike the one that struck down DeSean Jackson last year. And like he ran, and he ran a 4.59, but like obviously he's a click faster on that when you watch on a film. So with everything that's going on with teams not being able to get verified numbers on some guys, not being able to do the proper medical rechecks, I have him as a first-round talent, but those guys are due for a tumble, and that's why he's a day-two guy in my projection. When I'm envisioning success for Shenault, it's not unlike A.J. Brown with the Titans. I want him working the vertical third, manufacture touches, get it into his hands early because he could be a nuisance downfield and after the catch. There's more running back right now to his game than polished wide receiver, but I think he falls to a point where you feel comfortable enough with the injury history there, and you trust the tape with his athleticism, and you could find yourself with a steal. So he might be wide receiver 8, wide receiver 9, wide receiver 10 off the board, but that's just because of the haziness around his evaluation, the unchecked boxes.
Michael Kist, our guest, talking NFL draft on the Midday 180, a guy that got a lot more publicity and is getting a lot more publicity right now because he was a big part of Peter King's Monday morning quarterback, is Ashton Davis, the free safety from Cal. A track-type speed, what type of football player is he?
Yeah, if there's a guy that missed out on first-round buzz because he couldn't run at the combine along with Shenault, this is the guy. Cancel pro days, all that. My money is on Ashton Davis as a guy that would have vaulted himself into that first-round discussion. He's an all-American hurdler, has some of the best range in this class, right up there with Grant Delpit. So you're looking at a pure free safety, somebody you can plug into a single high defense, and you've got yourself a difference maker. The type of skill set that he has is in big demand, because while you can get by with solid players with solid range in the deep middle there, if you've got Ashton Davis, it changes what you can do, because guys that can consistently make plays from deep middle to sideline and all that stuff, they are special. So if you need that in your defense, you're jumping for joy that Ashton Davis didn't run. Like, I don't need Charlie Casserly out there with a stopwatch time in his 40 to tell me this guy has serious juice. I think this is a round one talent that should be talked about up there with Delpit and McKinney from Alabama. So if I've got the card early in round two, I'm absolutely running to the podium.
Terrell Burgess, a safety from Utah. I'll get your thoughts on his ability to play nickel, but also only a one-year starter for Utah. And he's a player that if you draft him, he can play in every phase of your special team. So he can be active on game day as you get him more acclimated to being a full-time starter in a defense.
You've really done your draft prep. I am very much impressed with that.
I'm sitting at home at night, you know? We're 1 month or 4 weeks away now from Titans Radio draft coverage, so I'm amping up my reading.
There you go. Well, Burgess is one of those guys that just like pops on film when you're watching another guy, like somebody you kind of fall in love with organically. For me, like I'd been told he was solid, but nobody was telling me to rush to his film. In fact, I was watching the Utah's corner, Jalen Johnson, who's a good player, by the way, and I kept seeing this number 26 guy buzz around. It's like a little smaller guy. He's 5'11", 202. He's got short arms, but he's showing up in the box, making tough tackles. He's covering slot guys. He's rotating to the deep half, and he's showing some really good instincts, which tells me the guy is probably a film junkie. And I mean, who doesn't love smart, high effort, unafraid, and versatile safety? So in Burgess, you've got yourself, you know, a one-year starter that's a bit under the radar, who I think is an ascending talent. For just 1 year of experience, those instincts really pop out. I think he can contribute in your sub packages, fill in at different spots in a pinch. I think, like you said, nickel is the best place for him out of the gate, but I love everything about this guy, and I think he's very good value in round three if that's where he goes.
Titans are in need of some corners right now on their depth chart. We'll discuss a couple of them from the ACC day two selections that Michael Kist says are quality picks for rounds two and three of this draft. More with Michael Kist straight ahead. Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.
As we shelter in place, we're still bringing you the best in sports talk. The Sports Station. 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Michael Kist from Bleedy Green Nation, NFL draft analyst, with us as we discuss ACC and Big 12 value picks for day two of this NFL draft, which is 4 weeks from today. Bryce Hall, cornerback from Virginia, out of the ACC. They don't play a lot of man defense at Virginia, Michael, but he plays leverage really well. He's good with his understanding of route concepts. That should help him get drafted in the second round at least.
Yeah, he's a smart player, and I think he's kind of the forgotten man of the cornerback group. And I really don't have a feel for, like, a great feel for where he goes. I thought he'd come out last year and take advantage of a weaker cornerback class and be one of the top guys selected. But it's a stronger class this year, and his season ended on a pretty nasty and unfortunate ankle injury. I think there are definitely more fluid guys than Hall, and I'm worried about the long speed. He didn't run at Indy, so there's still a bit of a box left unchecked there, which could cause a slide. So it's really been some unfortunate events for Hall throughout this process, throughout this last year. But still, I mean, I love the build. 6'1", 202, 32-inch arms. I think he can play up at the line. He can play off, which allows some scheme diversity there. If you really want to get a feel for his game, go back and watch him against Kelvin Harmon, the big 6'2", 221-pounder from NC State last year. You'll see why some are still bullish on him. But again, bit of an unknown, but there's enough there, and it only takes one team to tango to where I wouldn't be shocked to see him go sometime in round two.
You know, there are a lot of bigger corners in this draft. A.J. Terrell comes to mind, too, from Clemson. He has size for the position. He has a wiry frame, though, but he's very athletic. And coaches will probably look at him as scheme versatile compared to a Bryce Hall type who we've only seen play in more of a zone.
Yeah, and first off, I think Terrell gets a bad rap off that national championship game. He got a sandwich eaten a little bit. So the recency bias there is kind of really colored who how he's talked about perhaps a bit unfairly. Now, I don't have him as a first rounder anyway, but so I don't want to get too carried away. But depending on what your scheme is, I think you can value Terrell because he does have that versatility. I think you are going to want to play him in off coverage more so than in press, which is fine for some schemes and maybe a red flag for others. Where I don't think he's limited is when you're projecting him into a man coverage scheme for sure. I think he could do both, but I like him in a man's coverage scheme. And that's what boosts his value for me. He may struggle with some bigger wide receivers when he's in the hip pocket, but like he's a grifter. He's constantly going to be there going after your wallet. So, you know, overall, he's somewhere in that round two discussion for me. I agree. He's got those play strength issues that he talked about. I think he's plenty versatile. But if you have a system that you really fits his skill set, you might have yourself an early starter with him.
Let's stay in that Clemson secondary with Kevon Wallace at safety. What do you think of him?
Yeah, this is a guy I saw a lot of live at the Senior Bowl practices, and you heard so much about like Isaiah Simmons and the draft type, and Wallace didn't really have a lot of steam at that time. But as the practices went on, you realize why he was there, because he kept popping. So Clemson demands a lot of versatility from their safeties, and it just so happens that versatility at that position is extremely valuable. There are three safeties that Clemson like to use there, and they use them all over the place. So can you check the box of playing in the box? Can you play free safety? Can you play the nickel? And I think Wallace has value because I think he can do all three. Now, I lean more towards the too high stuff when playing deep because I don't think his range is dynamic, but he's more of a short area burst type, and overall there's some size and length issues, but he's a good player that will also contribute on special teams right away and carve out a role.
Wondering about Jordan Brooks, the Texas Tech linebacker. Have seen comparisons to Al Woods, but also have seen a lot about maybe a inability to do a lot in coverage.
Yeah. One of the questions that I've been struggling with is the same one you're struggling with. It's a bit of a would you rather for like these late day two linebackers. And it's would I rather take a guy I like against the run? And despite seeing a fluid athlete, I think Brooks is a fluid athlete. I would still have to project into a coverage role since there's a lack of that on film. Or would I rather take a swing on a guy like a Davion Taylor from Colorado who played like that overhang coverage role because he's a tremendous athlete but really struggles to see it and attack it when playing in the box against the run? Both guys, for me, can get washed out a bit, can get stuck on blocks, but can be really good shooting gaps. So I think that area is like a tie for me. But where I come down on it is I think the difference is that Jordan Brooks has the edge in experience by a lot. He started from day one in Lubbock, almost 50 starts to his name, while Taylor has only played 24 games, never really played in high school due to his religious beliefs. And Taylor got moved around at Colorado, so his development arc is going to take longer. So I prefer a guy like Brooks in that situation, but I definitely think you have to project his coverage skills, which is kind of uneasy.
I want to talk about one of the big men in this draft out of the Big 12 and out of TCU, Ross Blacklock, a player who's did a lot for that TCU defense. What do you make of him, his size, and what he could bring to a team?
Yeah, he's so quick off the line, and he marries his feet with his hands well to win early. I know from watching the Eagles' defensive line every week and knowing their philosophy, what they really value in their interior defensive linemen is disruption. Can you penetrate? Can you win early and cause havoc? Blacklock does that consistently, and not just in the run game, because I think he's a very good pass rusher too, and that's what puts him above a guy like a Neville Gallimore from Oklahoma, because I have a better idea of what I'm getting as a pass rusher out of the gate. So I can get big run-stopping big boys at any point in the draft, right? Those guys tend to fall. They get moved around the league. You can sign them from wherever. What's in demand is pass rush chops and athleticism, and I like that from Blacklock.
Lucas Niang from TCU. Let's stay there with the Frogs. Offensive tackle, prototypical size, length, and speed for that position, an NFL-ready frame. He had a hip injury last season that I'm sure teams will want to know about. But beyond that, a good athlete that can play on the offensive line. And I wonder how you've set him in a group of tackles, Michael, that is very deep, especially first round. Is Niang right behind in that second tier?
Yeah, I would say he would be in that second tier, like around maybe OT6 to OT8, like that kind of framework there. Like, I think, for instance, Austin Jackson from USC goes higher. But, like, the more I watch on Niang, the more I like him. And I like him in zone schemes. I think he's still a bit of a project. I think he has the potential to hit his ceiling quicker. I think a great place for him, even though I like him in his zone scheme, is the Titans, where he isn't forced to start week one. And who knows, maybe he ends the season as a starter, but there's no immediate need to throw him into the fire. Like you said, this is an athletic dude, got nice size, 6'6", 315, 34 and a quarter inch arms, which is above average everywhere. He's got some big mitts on him. He's an impressive mound of clay to work with, but his situation, like you said, is cloudy, and I think he falls a bit because of the medical recheck required on what was the hip labrum. He had that surgery in late October, but I think he's a good player. I thought the 2018 tape was really good. 2019, he struggled a bit, you know, dealing with that, but a really good player that, if it weren't for the medical recheck and the haziness around that, would go a little bit higher than he's going to. So I think he's going to be a good value.
Let's fit in one more. Denzel Mims, wide receiver from Baylor, his stock continues to rise because he crushed the combine. Huge catch radius, and he can play the X or the Z because he has that long speed ability. That means he has a high ceiling if he can play both of those spots.
Yeah, definitely. And I mentioned Mims is like a day two guy, because that's where I value him. But I don't take issue with anybody that would take him in the 20s. I think, like you said, Mims has really done everything he can, say, like, since the season was over, to answer questions about his game. Baylor had him run a very limited route tree, and he comes out to the Senior Bowl, nobody can cover him on a variety of routes. If you were wondering about his deep speed, he shuts that up by running 4.38. Like, he's got some real stiffness in his hips on film. Like, his hips don't move. It's kind of comical, but he checks in with a 90th percentile three cone, so he's even got you questioning what you thought you knew about him. Now, Mims is a legit track athlete with training and all that at 6'3", 207, and I think he mastered the technique in some of those drills, so those times may be a bit misleading, especially the three cone. But there isn't a box that he has not checked. He dominated the Senior Bowl. Like, wide receiver coaches are going to be raving about his ceiling. So while I might see him as a round two guy again, I will not argue with taking him in round one. I get why the hype is there.
You know, they're not known for playing defense in the Big 12. So is it more difficult to evaluate an offensive player in that conference because the offense gets theirs anyway, or a defensive player because the defenses are just not very good?
I think it's tough with the schemes. You see, like, the three down linemen and the weird pass rushes, and you get a ton of off coverage. I think it's really tough to evaluate, like, offenses, especially with some of, like, the poor tackling. Like, CeeDee Lamb is great after the catch, but, like, there were, like, four touchdowns he had against four different teams that should have never happened in any situation whatsoever. Like, I get it. Lamb's good. I'm not trying to take away from him. But then also the case of not playing, you know, quality corners, getting off coverage all the time. Like, it's a struggle to find press reps from some of these teams. And that's what I really want to see when we're talking about these guys. Like, are they slot only? And sometimes you really don't know. You don't have enough available film of them working against press, working against quality corners, working against quality tacklers. So I do think it's a struggle to evaluate offensive players in the Big 12.
Michael, plug the podcast. How can we listen to you before you join us again next Thursday?
Yeah, put in Bleeding Green Nation into any podcast app. It'll pop up. We have 1,400 five-star ratings. We don't just talk Eagles. We talk draft. We talk NFL, philosophy, history, all that stuff. We're doing it all, so check that out.
And you can follow him on Twitter, at MichaelKistNFL. As part of the bio, he is the Midday 180 Draft Analyst winner. You can hear why whenever he joins us each Thursday. Michael, appreciate it as always. And we continue to get props for the microphones on this show. And that is due to you, sir, for joining us that week that we started all this.
I'm glad I could help somebody in these tough times. And you guys do sound great, so I'm glad you're getting through it. I'm glad I could be helpful for y'all and to listeners as well. I'm sure it's great for them.
Appreciate you, man.
Thanks, guys.
Michael Kist has been our guest. Chad, should we get back into some of the words that can be said in different ways?
We've got a number of good examples.
We do.
We can throw it out to the audience, and maybe we can just all vote on how we say the words and see how different we are, or maybe how similar we are. Who knows? Seems like it's a day of differences here on the show. So we'll see if we can maybe have some things we agree on when we come back. Phone lines are also open.
Fat, yeah, that's skinny. Where it started. Where will we go next?
Who knows? The world is ours. 615-737-1045. 737-1045.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone.
Non-stop sports talk continues at 2 with the 3HL. Now, back to the Midday 180 on 104.5 The Zone.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue online, edleysbbq.com. Chad, describe the brisket lasagna from Edley's Barbecue.
Well, I'd describe it this way. It's a marriage of three different culinary worlds. You've got south of the border, a bit of a Mexican flair to it with peppers and the spiciness of it a little bit. I wouldn't call it spicy, but a little bit of Mexican flair to it. You've got the taste of the south with the smoky brisket, and you've got the taste of northern Italy with the red sauce and the lasagna. It is terrific. I would highly recommend it. Only $20. It feed Angie and I for two nights for sure. Yeah, I mean, it easily going to feed us for two nights, maybe more. And it is delicious. And you just pop it in the oven for 50 minutes, and you're all set.
I don't know if we want to overpump northern Italy right now, but I get your drift. I get your drift. Did Evie like it, or did she eat something else?
Evie had a little bit of it, and she was okay with it, but she would prefer her mac and cheese that we microwave up.
They all do.
Okay. So, hey, they started today, this morning. Chad, he had a nice slice of pecan pie is what he said. Was it yesterday for dinner, for dessert?
Last night, yeah. I got it from Edley's Barbecue.
And I said, hey, you know, I've always said pecan. I think a vast majority of, and I don't know if it's vast majority of Southerners, because I think there's a segment of Georgia that would say pecan. I know Virginia Beach and Chesapeake, my family there, they say pecan. But I've always said pecan, and I think it's split across the country about 50-50. There are other words that are definitely 50-50 on pronunciation. Let's give an example. Route or root?
I would say route, like route running, right? You don't say
but
route
if you
running.
Go if you go to Sonic, do you get a route fifth route? What is it?
It's a route 66 or whatever it is out west. Like I would route say 44. Route 66. Route, but yeah, there's different. It's kind of like pecan and pecan for me. There's different meanings to it. I say
you're bipolar
route when just, I'm talking just, about a road. I say route when I'm talking about a receiver running a route or the route I'm going to take via the roads. But if the road's name is route something, it's route and not route.
Pajamas or pajamas?
Pajamas.
Pajamas.
Pajamas for me. Reed?
Reed?
I can't remember the last time I've ever used that word. I guess it's pajamas.
PJs? Reed goes with PJs instead of pajamas or pajamas.
All natural, baby.
Aunt or aunt?
Aunt.
I say aunt.
I say aunt, but I do slip into aunt once in a while.
You say auntie? Do you ever go with
auntie? I am very against all of these weird, like Simon calls his grandfather on the other side, Pop Pop, which I can handle. But anything that goes to like or all of that stuff just freaks me out.
Pop is the same as Meemaw. I had a Mamaw.
No.
My grandmother on my dad's side was Mamaw. I had Nana. Sorry. I had Gran. Are you okay with Gran?
Granny?
Nana? How is Pop-Pop? This is, again, Pop-Pop. Picking and choosing. How is Pop-Pop?
Yeah. I'm picking it because it's the one that my family chose, and so I accept it. And all the other ones I find weird. I think it should be Grandma and Grandpa. I don't understand where all these other ones come from. They're like wood people.
Here's what's funny about my grandparents. Let's all go down a list of what we called our grandparents, okay? My four grandparents. My dad's side. My mom's side, who were around the longest, alive the longest. Mm-hmm. Nana and Gran, who were my neighbors growing up. And then my dad's side, which is hilarious to me, was Mamaw and Roy. We just called our granddad. Not Grandpa, Papa, not Pop-Pop, nothing else. He was just Roy.
I think Roy sets off, what was the grandmother?
Mamaw.
Yeah, Roy sets off Mamaw.
It was also Mary. It was Mary Withrow, and we called her Mamaw, but it was just Roy. He had no other terms of endearment. He just, what I remember about Roy, he passed away when I was 7, I think, was we'd bring him a milkshake, my dad and I, and he would just sit with like a short sleeve, like a Dwight Schrute, like short sleeve button up shirt, but the shirt was always completely unbuttoned in the summertime where his chest and stomach was completely out. And he'd sit on a leather couch and eat the milkshake and not speak the entire time. And I only referred to him as Roy. That was it.
A quiet man.
Yes.
I love that. So my sister and I always said Papa or Papa and Granny. But it was, we differentiated. So it was Granny Hutton. And then on my mom's side, it was just Granny and Papa. But it was Papa George and Granny Hutton on my dad's side.
Paul, give your boring names for your grandparents. Grandfather, grandmother.
Grandma and grandpa. And the other two were dead. Sorry, my grandpa.
So you didn't refer to the dead? You said the dead?
My father's mother was dead before my mother even met her. And my father's father died when I was 3. And honestly, I think my family referred to him as Grandpa Kuharski.
Yeah.
Grandpa and Grandpa and Grandma.
I want to hear Reed.
That's what everyone should be.
So I never I never knew either of my grandfathers. They both died when I was my mother's father died when she was young, and my dad's dad died before I was like 2 or 3, but his name was Irvin. But they called him Dick for some reason. I have no idea. His name was Urban C, and they called him Dick. And apparently, at some point in my childhood, I wanted to be like him. So I told everyone I wanted people to call me Dick too. So my dad's side of the family for nearly 30 something years called me Dick. My dad's side of the family. I don't know where that all came from.
We now know where you got your sense of humor, Reed.
Man, but we call you instead of Dennis Reed now, who's the serial killer,
Dick Reed,
or the mass, not the serial killer, he's the mass murderer, the Captain D's guy. He can now be Dickie Reed. Can we call you Dickie Reed instead of David Reed?
Dick Reed, why Dickie? Dick Reed.
He's our very own Dick Whitman, and he became Don Draper. Just this Dick Reed became David Reed.
Ladies and gentlemen, in our next segment, very special segment of the Midday 180, we want to introduce you to our new producer, Dick Reed.
I just remember I was
so hard he's killed over. So good.
In college, I was dating a young lady, and I went around one of my uncles for the first time, and he called me Dick. She was like, "What did he just call you?" I was like, "It's a long story." But anyway, my dad's mom was Granny, and my mother's mom was Mama.
JT points out that because you were the younger Reed in this, and you wanted to be called Dick, you could be the little Dick Reed.
Yeah, that's why I left that part out.
Yeah, little Dickie Reed.
Dennis is going to be long forgotten by the time I'm done with this.
Whoa, this is an amazing revelation for the show here. Is what Reed wanted to be called.
I was just prepared to talk.
Most people
Nevada.
From under this. Reed sought this. Most people with that name want to get out from under it. Reed invited it. He welcomed it. He embraced it. He
Little Richard for- Reed.
Just an incredible revelation on the show today. From Dennis Reed to Dick Reed is what we'll respond to and refer to David Reed as from here on out. Some other ones that are coming across. By the way, Mid-High Apparel on Twitter on the pecan debate says, it just depends on my mood. What mood I'm in.
That's how I was going to describe route or root. Like I feel like if I order the drink from Sonic, I say root.
Yep.
But if I, but it's spelled the same way. And if I say I'm taking the route to work, I say route.
Again, yeah, if it's a road, fair. If it's a road, it's route. So it's that's the Route 66 or whatever, the famous highway out west. So that's route. But if I'm taking a route, then it's a route. But if it's the name of something, it's route.
I've got another entry here. What the Yankees do to the Orioles is rout them.
Yeah, that's a different one. That's true, a different meaning. Another one is, as Reed mentioned, Nevada or Nevada.
So I tend to lean towards what those who live in Nevada say, and they say Nevada.
That's what they want, right? That's the correct pronunciation.
But this is a great one, though, because I think the vast majority of the country says Nevada.
That's Nevada. This is one where I've evolved. I said Nevada my whole life, but in the last 5 years, realizing that the governor of Nevada was instructing everyone, it's kind of like our Mariota stance. See, if I can change, everyone out there can change also. Now that he's no longer a quarterback, we don't have to worry about it as much. But you don't have to say Mariota. You can change to Mariota. I evolved, and I now say it correctly. It is, in fact, Nevada. The other thing I think about, Paul, with Nevada is on Veep. Remember the aide to Selena Meyer? Yeah. Every time she would talk about going, she would say Nevada, and he would whisper it, Nevada, ma'am. It's Nevada, ma'am, over and over. It's Nevada.
Here's my thing. I try to say it right, but I sometimes forget which way is the right way. So I'm trying to say the right way, but sometimes I'm like, I can't remember which way is the right way.
So the only time I ever went to Las Vegas, I was privy to a history lesson that Penn Jillette gave someone about the pronunciation of Nevada. At one point, it had the little symbol above the A, like an accent mark. And apparently it means snow in Spanish or something, Nevada or something like that. So that's where I got that. I'm also that way.
I love when you speak Spanish on the show, Reed.
Colorado and Colorado. To me, it's Colorado, not Colorado. There's no O in there. It's Colorado.
It's Colorado. Is this based on your Spanish lessons?
Si.
Dick. Thank you, Dick.
Colorado.
I would say Colorado.
Rad, no Rod.
I think of like Coronado. I think of like Hector Coronado.
Yeah, that has nothing to do with Colorado.
Who's Hector Coronado? Spanish, that's also coming from the Spanish, right? Wooden ship, I believe, is the meaning.
Final entry sent to us. Envelope or envelope?
Envelope.
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 I say envelope.
Envelope. Am I the only one who says envelope? Come on.
I've heard some say envelope.
I'm getting routed in the pecan pronunciation, but I feel like if we put envelope or envelope out there, envelope run away from.
We can't take Chad's pronunciation on an object he doesn't know where the stamp goes on.
Yeah, that's right. Where's the return address go, Chad?
Although I do know how to pronounce stamp.
Good point, Dick Reed.
I think we all say stamp the exact same way. Is that a stomp or a stamp?
Stamp? There's one that we didn't get to that we still have to get to that Chad got via text earlier that I think is a good one.
Oh, you want to do that now or after the break?
I think we probably have to do it after the break unless we're going completely renegade here.
Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.